The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Lots to get to on today's program. First up, the announcement. Of course, I made this yesterday, but don't forget about the special Sabbath edition of the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. That's this Saturday. The featured speaker will be my father, live, coming to you live from Edmond, Oklahoma, the beautiful Armstrong Auditorium, 9 a.m. there in central Oklahoma. And 2 p.m. here in Britain, and at different times, of course, all over the world. So be sure to join us. What, we got just a little bit over 1,000, at least on the YouTube stream. I think by the time you add Facebook and all those other ways that you can listen to the program, even the audio stream at the websites, we had several thousand listen in, but the one I was following was the YouTube stream. So hopefully we can far surpass the 1,000 that we had, or roughly 1,000. I think it was even a little bit over 1,000 for a time last Saturday. So hopefully we'll set another record for this program. And speaking of that Saturday broadcast, the one last week, we got quite a few letters, emails in response, and I haven't had time to squeeze them in yet. So hopefully on today's show, I can give you some listener feedback, perhaps some feedback that you submitted to the program. Well, not to be outdone by Prime Minister Modi of India, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is now restricting the movements of Israelis to within 100 meters of their apartment or their house. So 8 million Israelis are now forbidden to walk within or beyond 100 meters from their home. That's approximately the length of a football pitch. 100 meters. That's all that they have. Brent emailed us last night from Jerusalem, said he went for his last run through the city. Well, I guess he could run if he just went 100 meters back and forth. But that's it. Total lockdown. Pretty much house arrest. This is from the Jerusalem Post. Additional restrictions, according to Prime Minister, the Prime Minister's office, it says public transportation will be significantly reduced and may only be used for approved purposes. Food delivery and essential house maintenance services will be allowed to operate, but there will be no takeaway. So quite the crackdown. And then listen to this. It says Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu on Monday night told the cabinet 10,000 Israelis could die from the coronavirus and 1 million could be infected. That's a quote from Prime Minister Netanyahu. 10,000 Israelis. So far, Israel's had 5 deaths. 5. In a nation of 8 million. And just to update you on yesterday's segment, India has now 13 deaths in a nation of 1.3 billion. Total lockdown, 14. It's going up. It's soaring, as CNN would say. 14 deaths in a nation of 1.3 billion. Who knows how many other deaths happen every day as a matter of routine. No one cares about it. No one thinks about it. People carry on with their daily lives. But we've got to follow the tracker. We've got to follow the map with all the red balloons. You've got to follow the running count. I guess it's right now adjacent to the Chiron on most cable stations. That's just what we're supposed to do, as I said yesterday. Well, obviously, you lock it down. Now, I think there's, as much as we do like the leadership of Prime Minister Netanyahu. Certainly seems like there's some political motivation here. They've been in a standstill, basically, politically, for the past year and a half. And so to show some decisive leadership, it's probably something that, judging by even the reaction here in the UK, is probably something that is well-received. 76% agree with the lockdown here in the UK. They have no questions or concerns about the legality of it. And I would imagine it's about the same in Israel. The other thing that was pointed out to me yesterday, and again, this is true all across Europe, is that in Israel, here again, you have national socialized medicine. And if the medical professionals say it, that is final word. That is the final authority. If you go into hospital in Israel, you're putting your faith, your trust in them for your life. So as we've been covering this week, you'll remember that quote from the healing booklet. Tremendous power these medical experts have. Tremendous power. One thing I was talking with Mr. Hilliker about yesterday, as we're getting ready for the next Trumpet magazine, is just how many different angles there are to this story. And they all illustrate, don't they, just how much this is Satan's world. It's not God's world. You have people who want to politicize this crisis. You have people that are weaponizing it. They're exploiting it. And then just the confusion and the derangement that sets in, that's all part of it as well. The mob mentality. 1 Corinthians 14 comes to mind. God's not the author of confusion and disorder. Who is? Who is? In Ephesians 2:2, if he's surcharging the air with his attitudes of selfishness, self-centered, greed, jealousy, resentment, and then look at all this irrational behavior, this reckless behavior, from top to bottom. Like Isaiah 1 says, there's a sickness from head to toe. We're seeing it on full display. Mr. Armstrong said this in Mystery of the Ages. He said, people have no realization of the tremendous power of Satan. The human spirit within each human is automatically tuned to Satan's wavelength. We have no realization of how powerful the devil is. And if we're not disconnecting and plugging into God and his spirit, we are, as he said, automatically tuned to Satan's wavelength. Satan has been cast down. He's confined to this earth. It's as if, like I said yesterday, the world leaders are trying to outdo one another. But look at this massive overreaction. The cure is killing us. The ramifications of this reaction, this overreaction to the virus, not the virus itself, it is a deadly virus, particularly with a small group of people. But the ramifications of the reaction to it, that's going to far outlive the dangers that this coronavirus poses. What will the economic cost be? We're starting to think on that with all of these packages, these bailout packages being put together. We don't even know the detail. Thousands of pages. Come on. What are we going to learn later? What are we going to learn down the road about what was put into this $2 trillion spending package, this bailout? I can't imagine the pork that's in there. Just crammed in there. You know, initially they were talking about 1 trillion. This is where we are today. Look, this is serious. We're going to need a trillion. Well, maybe 1.2 trillion. Well, maybe 1.6 trillion. Well, if we're in trillions, how about 2 trillion? I mean, what's the difference? $2 trillion. That's what they're pushing through Congress. And you heard about the big bailout package here in the UK last weekend. Speaking of the UK, yesterday we had 43 people die all across this nation. The death toll is now at 465. 43 died. Now, the day before, it was 87. So there's probably some experts that are a little bit worried right now. Because you see, and not to mention commentators. Because, see, this is supposed to go into the tens of thousands of deaths. It's not headed in the direction that the experts said it would go in. The BBC, remember this article I gave to you earlier in the week, the one where they said, look, in a worst-case scenario, if we don't take any action, it's going to be 500,000 deaths. A half a million people in Britain are going to die. Now, if we take some moderate action, if we take some steps to try to slow it down, you know, isolate the vulnerables, try to stay away from social spacing, whatever, then maybe we can get it down to 250,000 deaths. But if we really crack down, if we go into a lockdown, well, we could maybe get it down to 20,000 deaths. And considering the alternatives, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. Now, keep in mind, for context, keep in mind that on average, you have 10 to 17,000 people die every year in the UK from influenza. That's an infectious disease. Thousands. Every single year. So, what are they saying now? Well, listen to this from the London Times. It says, NHS, now likely to cope with coronavirus, says key scientist. Well, there's a scientist saying, look, I guess this isn't going to be quite the burden on NHS, the National Health Service, that maybe we thought it would be. And do you know who this scientist is? He's the one that said it's going to be hundreds of thousands of deaths. Hundreds of thousands of deaths. It says here the virus death toll could end up being substantially lower than 20,000, with most of the fatalities in people who would have died later this year anyway, a government advisor has said. Now just think about this for a second. Here is a guy, when was it? Was it Monday night? Monday night, Boris Johnson's on TV. He makes the announcement, we're going into full lockdown. Can't leave your house except to go to the supermarket. You can go outside to exercise once, but then get back into the house. No groups of over two people. Can't meet with three people. Can't meet with four people. We're under lockdown. If you're getting married, postpone it. If you have a baptism, postpone it. If you have a funeral, well, that we can do. I guess, well, we have to because so many people are dying after all. We got to have the funerals. That was Monday night. Tuesday would have been the first full day of the lockdown. And then here comes this expert, one of the ones responsible for this extreme overreaction. And he comes and testifies yesterday before the MPs in Parliament and says, well, you know, it's looking like now it might be quite a bit less than 20,000. His name's Neil Ferguson, not to be confused with Niall Ferguson, one of our favorite historians. I made the mistake of mixing them up yesterday. I was really disappointed in him. But then was told it's a different one. He works at Imperial College as a scientist, and it says whose research precipitated tougher government measures last week. We touched on this yesterday. This group of scientists at Imperial College in London, they put together this model, and look, a lot of authorities in the United States also have used this model. They've also relied on this model. I think that COVID Act Now website put together in the U.S., that tells you about all of the sickness, how many hospitalizations we're going to have, how many deaths, and all of them are grossly exaggerated. Well, here's the imperial model. The government here in the UK used it to make decisions that have been made this past week. It says here, Neil Ferguson, the Imperial College scientist whose research precipitated tougher government measures last week, told MPs it might be as much as half or two-thirds of the deaths we see because these are people at the end of their lives or who have underlying conditions. In other words, he's saying the final death count for coronavirus might be well under 20,000, and quite a few of them that actually do die from the virus were probably going to die anyway this year. So there might not be really any noticeable impact on the number of deaths total this year. There's 600,000 people who die in Britain every year. Great Britain, Northern Ireland, Wales, Scotland, England put together. 600,000. And if we get to the end of this year and there is no difference in that average figure, look at what we did because of the pandemic. Look at the action that we took. Look at the liberties that we gave up. Look at the debt that we accumulated. Look at the government dependence. We're all working for the government, as that one commentator said. Allison Pearson, she writes at The Telegraph. She tweeted today, lovely chief medical bod Chris Whitty says critical care beds are actually less full right now than they would be at this time of year for normal flu. Well, how about that? I guess people aren't making a run on the hospitals, at least not here in Britain. Now, it's happening in northern Italy and Madrid. But it turns out the experts, they didn't get it right here in Britain. It says here, well, basically, if you look at the numbers, speaking of Italy, and we made this point with a previous article earlier this week as well, the fact that if you're lying in a cancer ward about to die of cancer and you happen to catch the coronavirus there at the last, well, what is the actual cause of death? And according to one health official in Italy, quite a few are being counted as corona deaths when they've got one, sometimes two, pretty serious underlying health conditions. But carrying on with this London Times piece, it says, he said, this is the expert that they relied upon, he said that through a combination of enforced social distancing and a nationwide scramble to set up thousands more intensive care beds, he and his colleagues were now reasonably confident that the health service would cope with the crisis. See, he's kind of, well, first there's a quiet, backpedal. Oh, and by the way, it's probably not going to be 20,000. But notice in that comment there, too, he says, because of the enforced social distancing and nationwide scramble, the enforced distancing has been going on for 24 hours, basically, before this guy's testimony. And he's getting up there and actually saying, after one day of this, we've actually overestimated, and it came down in a hurry because of government action. We took swift action. The problem is, a lot of this action that's being taken, there's no going back. You can't roll back these social programs. You can't slow down the nanny state. Once it gets moving, once you introduce all of these socialist programs, there's no going back. So this is what it took. This is the crisis that brought on all of this massive overreach. Says here, we think that in some areas of the country, ICUs will get very close to capacity, but we won't breach them at the national level. He said, predicting that the worst of the first wave was likely to pass within 3 weeks. But there are there are risks that we now have because of the action that's been taken. Consider the impact. Consider the financial impact. Listen to this. This is from the medical expert that played a significant role in developing the imperial model that so many experts have relied upon to create their charts and maps and so on. It says, but he added, there would be a cost thanks to the stringent measures used to save the health service from disaster. He says, thanks to the stringent measures used to save the health service from disaster, we will be paying for this for many decades to come in terms of economic impact. Well, thanks for that. Thanks for that, Mr. Expert. This is what we did to save the health service from disaster. We ruined the economy. It's going to impact the economy for decades to come. There's another story at the Times this morning talking about how that the oncoming economic crash, the casualties from that, are going to be far worse than what we see happening from this virus. It says, if the coronavirus lockdown leads to a fall in GDP of more than 6.4%, more years of life will be lost due to the recession than will be gained through beating the virus, a study suggests. I keep thinking of that statement by the governor of New York. If we go through all of this and end up saving one life, well, then I'll be happy. Well, we're going through all of this, and as it turns out, we're going to save far fewer lives than we thought because there's not that many dying from it. Not like what was predicted. Again, it is a disease, and some have died. There's no getting around that. But when you compare it to other infectious diseases like influenza and tuberculosis, it says here, Philip Thomas, professor of risk management at Bristol University, said that keeping the economy going in the next year was crucial, otherwise the measures would do more harm than good. Well, look at that. The cure. The cure is worse than the disease. It says here, I'm worried that in order to solve one problem, we'd create a bigger problem, he said a day after economists predicted we were on course for the worst recession in modern history. So now we're having to shift from the medical experts over to the economic experts who are saying, it doesn't look so good. And you've got people in the Trump administration, too, saying that we're going to be having to brace ourselves for record jobless claims. I guess those numbers come out tomorrow. So we'll see. We'll begin to see now, just days into this, the overall economic impact. And then you start rolling out these trillion-dollar aid packages, these trillion-dollar bailouts. And all for this virus, which when we get to the end, when the dust finally settles, we'll have to see if it's even more deadly than the swine flu of 2009, or even just the common flu of every winter season. We will see. Listen to this reporter yesterday as he asked this question to President Trump, clip one.
How many deaths are acceptable?
Yeah. How many? None. Okay. How many deaths are acceptable to me? None. Okay. None. If that's your question.
There he is taking the cue, the reporter that is, from the radical left, from the governor of New York. Well, how many deaths are acceptable then? If you're gonna lift this, if you're going to reopen America for business, give us a number. How many people are you willing to kill? How many people are you willing to let die in order to open up the economy? Well, you could ask that reporter the question in reverse. How many people are you willing? How many deaths are acceptable to you if you shut everything down? If you destroy everyone's livelihood? And furthermore, again, the obsession with this one disease. Now, there were some unknowns going in. And you can give people at least a little bit of the benefit of the doubt early on. But now the facts are starting to roll in. Here's a reporter so concerned about, well, how many deaths are acceptable? How many tuberculosis deaths are acceptable? There's 1.3 million of those every year. That is infectious. What about respiratory infections? That's the biggest killer worldwide as far as communicable diseases are concerned. What about influenza? Corona deaths, though, if you listen to the media, they are much, much more precious than any other death. Any other death is of no consequence. It's of no concern. It's just the corona death. And they're going to be searching like they're doing here in the UK right now. As soon as they can find someone who's young that dies from this, that's going to be headline news. That's going to be leading the nightly newscast. That's going to be at the top of the fold. Because, well, most people that die from it are older. So if there's someone that's a little bit younger, that's perfect. That's perfect for the narrative we want to put out there. And they're putting it out there. Still, even as you have these experts now quietly beginning their retreat, quietly beginning to backtrack.
Well, I know I said 500,000, but it might be more like 20. It actually might be lower than 20,000. As I said yesterday, there's a big difference between a pandemic that kills 20,000 people and one that kills 2 to 4 million people. A huge difference. It says in the Times piece, the challenge that many countries in the world are dealing with is how to move from an initial intensive lockdown to something that will have societal effects, but which will allow the economy to restart. He added, that's likely to rely on very large-scale testing and contact tracing. By following up the people who have been in contact with the infected, this could allow local outbreaks to be controlled and maintain infections at low levels indefinitely. So that's one of the experts now. And so now these nations are beginning to grapple, and you have to give Donald Trump some credit for broaching the subject. This can't go on forever. Some have said it's going to go on months and months and months. It's not. It's going to be weeks. It's going to be weeks. And there he was the other day saying that, look, there's a lot of people that die of infectious disease. That's just the reality of this world. And I would add to that, that's just the way it is in Satan's world. Now, in God's world, there's not going to be anything like what we see today. Infectious disease, cancer, all of these diseases we bring on ourselves, they're going to become a thing of the past because we're going to be keeping God's laws perfectly. But in Satan's world, this is the reality. And right now, because of the hysteria, the only deaths that matter each day, each week, each month, each year are those that come as a result or are in any way related to coronavirus. So the challenge now countries are facing is, how are we going to transition from lockdown to reopening our nations for business? And we're about to watch President Trump, in my view, lead the Western world out of this lockdown. It says at the Telegraph, 2/3 of coronavirus victims may have died this year anyway. I think I touched on this a moment ago, but again, it quotes from this Neil Ferguson expert who's recovering at home. I guess he got the disease as well. It says he told the Science and Technology Committee that experts were now expecting around 20,000 deaths, although said it may be a lot less. But then he adds this. But he said that many of those deaths, again, it's going to be a lot less. And then he says many of those deaths were likely to be old and seriously ill people who would have died from other conditions before the year end anyway. So now we're beginning to see some of these few that were protesting. Just a few days ago, Peter Hitchens comes to mind. He was right. He was right. But think about what's happened. The massive bailout package introduced last Saturday, just a few days ago, Friday night, last Saturday, and then Boris Johnson's decree on Monday evening. If this professor, if this expert from Imperial College would have said any of this even a week ago, the UK might have prevented going forward with these disastrous moves. Just a week ago, on Sunday, Peter Hitchens was asking, and so here I am asking bluntly, is the close down of the country the right answer to the coronavirus? I will be accused of undermining the NHS and threatening public health and all kinds of other conformist rubbish, but I ask you to join me because if we have this wrong, we have a great deal to lose. If we get this wrong, there's a lot we can lose here. Well, we're just a few days on from that, and already, we're beginning to see that we might have gotten it wrong, not just wrong, spectacularly so. And it looks like the same for the United States. The Telegraph, in another article today, it said the Prime Minister was panicked into abandoning a sensible COVID-19 strategy and has plunged society into crisis. Well, now they're saying it, but if you remember, the day after, it's a good thing you listen to this program, because the day after Boris Johnson's speech, as Richard Palmer, he handed me a stack of material. He couldn't believe it. He couldn't believe there weren't more people protesting, even in the media. Are we seriously going down this road? Well, now they're coming around and saying, you know what? Maybe the Prime Minister did panic. The Telegraph says, one can't help but wonder whether coronavirus is the West Berlin Wall moment. Liberal managerialism is collapsing under the weight of its own contradictions, much in the same way communism did 30 years ago. It says, in puffing about climate change while ignoring threats like bioengineered pandemics and nuclear war, UN junketeers, EU sycophants, and Westminster charlatans, and all the other globalist risk managers have shown themselves to be incapable of prioritizing risks. That's what you need in a world full of risks. You need a leader. You need a leader who's capable of managing the risks. You need a leader who will tell you the truth. You need a leader who won't panic and sell out the country, sell out its future for something that turns out to be not as big of a risk as everyone thought going in. So much trust in the experts. The Telegraph says, in blowing up the world economy, they have also shown themselves to be incapable of managing risks without exposing the planet to even greater dangers. Now, that's the long-term forecast that we'll give to you. The short-term, how could $2 trillion of funny money, pumping it into the system, pumping it into the stock market, sending checks out to the unemployed, telling employers in the United States, you know, go ahead, if you have to lay them off for 4 months, we'll give them the full salary. This is what they said with the UK package last weekend. We'll give them their full salary. They're all government employees. Sounds great. It sounds great for employers. It sounds great for employees. All of this money, they're just going to send it to my house? As if that's going to give incentive to people to get back to work. This is the road we're going down. Just fully embracing socialism. Bernie Sanders just must be cheering behind closed doors. Jeremy Corbyn, everyone's on board with it. The Democrats, they go full on, hey, if we're going to get this package through, we've got to have the Green New Deal in there as well. And that just led to a little bump in the road. And the Republicans, they were able to take out the worst of it. But what's in the rest of it? Well, no one really knows. No one's read it yet. It's kind of like Obamacare. You'll find out about the bill after it's passed. There's senators that haven't even read it. There's senators that don't even know the details of this nightmare. You know it's going to be that. It's supposed to be for coronavirus relief. It's supposed to be for small businesses. It's supposed to be so that we can get back to work. And you wait until you see what's actually tacked on. A billion here, a billion there, a billion. I saw one where it's something million that goes towards salaries of congressmen. The coronavirus bill, the relief bill. Yet another opportunity to boost the salaries of everyone. How much more of that will be revealed in the days and weeks ahead? It always happens. This is the U.S. economy. This is the economy in the U.K. The Telegraph says here, most chilling of all, perhaps, as this pandemic demonstrates, when managerial elites fail, they fall back on soft totalitarianism and the surveillance state to crawl their countries out of the messes they themselves have through their sheer incompetence created. It's an excellent article. Someone at the Telegraph who sees where this is leading, sad to say. Now the U.S., as I say, Jeroboam's going to lead the way, and the U.K. will probably be soon behind. And the short-term gains, they will be there. But the long-term, if we didn't know what we know about Christ's return, what would you just be thinking if you were a loving parent or grandparent? What would you be thinking about future generations? If this is what it took to react to a relatively mild virus, I don't say that to sound insensitive or anything like that. I'm just saying, by comparison, we went through the Spanish flu yesterday, and the evidence is still not out to convince someone who's just looking at the bottom line that it's even worse than the swine flu. But if this is the way nations react to this kind of a virus, what does it say about the challenges that we're going to be facing ahead? What does it say about the global pandemics that are prophesied to actually kill millions and millions and millions? Here we're talking about hundreds. In the UK, thousands worldwide. Right now it's 21,000 or so. So it's certainly spread around the world. But now all the experts, they're beginning their quiet, pretty subdued backtrack. Now they're saying, oh, well, it might be a little bit lower. But hey, it's great. It's great that you locked everything down because that kept it from spreading. You can expect to hear a lot of that in the weeks ahead, as they, in a roundabout way, congratulate themselves. You leaders, you took the extreme action. You saved us, thanks to our advice. They're going to take credit for it. Meanwhile, we're left with all of those sound bites, all of those quotes. Millions here, millions there, hundreds of thousands here, hundreds of thousands there. They get it wrong. And it's so rare, you rarely hear it, hardly ever, someone that comes forward and says, yeah, we got that wrong, and I'm really and truly sorry. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
One may blind his eyes to existing facts and trends and say the world cannot get any worse than it already is. Or, if we just ignore the conditions and don't worry, perhaps they'll go away. But these conditions and trends won't just go away. Not unless they are caused to go away. The scriptures of the Holy Bible, the inspired revelation of the Supreme God, have foretold today's world conditions and trends, and give us the advance news of coming peace on earth, of universal prosperity, of happiness and joy, of veritable utopia. This is the good news of the world tomorrow, and it is absolutely sure. This coming world is vividly described in our booklet, The Wonderful World Tomorrow, What It Will Be Like. Bible prophecy explains in detail how God will intervene to save mankind from destroying himself. Jesus Christ will return to earth, putting an end to the rule of man and restore God's government on earth. To learn much more about this prophesied utopia, please visit thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England. This is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Flurry.
I think Victor Davis Hanson, I'll just go through this quickly before I get to some emails, but he had an article about a week ago that I think did a pretty good job of summarizing some of the positives here in the short term. There's certainly negatives, as I mentioned in the first segment. But he says in this piece how that when this finally does pass over, which it will, then you're going to see America ahead of the pack because, well, this virus certainly did shut down almost every Western nation. It hurt other nations alike just as well as it hurt the United States and Great Britain, as we covered in the first segment there. But he says here, Victor Davis Hanson, Donald Trump was ridiculed for taking on the Chinese juggernaut in 2017, even though he was not wrong that China was a serial world trade cheater, manipulating currencies, dumping products, and so on. It says, either by design or accident, the Trump standoff tore off the China scab. This is a trial for the world that has hurt China as well. It says the coronavirus helped remind the world that the Hong Kong democracy protests, the creepy 1 million person re-education camps for Muslims, and internal Chinese Orwellian surveillance were characteristic, not aberrant. It says further on, some assembly plants will be shut down. Nations will be less trusting to outsource key industries to Chinese companies. Supply chains were changing before the epidemic and will redirect even more afterward. In some, China's mercantile system will take a hit. The only country that can match and surpass its economic output, the United States, will be the long-term beneficiary as investors and businesses look away from Beijing to a more transparent partner. So he's probably going to be off on some of these details, but I think you get the gist of what he's suggesting. That if President Trump, whenever that is, probably sooner rather than later, when he finally puts an end to this and says, that's enough, we've listened to the experts, we've shut down everything for a couple weeks, it's time for us to get back to work again. Toward the end of his piece, Victor Hanson says, as is always the case at the beginning of an economic recovery, the end of a war, or the relief that follows from the departure of a plague, the public rejoices and then spends and splurges. Reason will eventually replace panic as Americans conclude that COVID-19, while more lethal to vulnerable age groups and those with chronic illnesses, may not be quite as pandemic in the manner of historic influenzas, such as those in 1918 or even 1957. 57 was a flu epidemic that killed 70,000 Americans. It says here, the ensuing economic uptick will be multiplied by crashed oil prices that are likely to help U.S. consumers while not permanently hurting U.S. frackers, much less the U.S. economy, which is both the world's largest consumer and producer of oil and natural gas. It says, more likely, it will do more damage to the oil-producing Middle East and Russia. American consumers will receive a huge stimulus of reduced prices at the gas pump, just as summer driving approaches. He goes on and talks about the near zero interest rates and how that all of these extreme measures that are taken in the short run, there will be this infusion of economic activity as well. It's just a shame, though, to add to what he brings out, that there's no vision. There's no vision among leaders today. They're just thinking about the here and now. And this crisis has certainly demonstrated that point in a profound way. Look at how it's changed from one day to the next. Look at what the economy was doing just 3 or 4 weeks ago. Look at what happened following the declaration of it being a pandemic by CNN and the WHO. And then the national emergency. March 9th, March 11th, March 13th. What are we at today? March, it's on my computer here somewhere. 25th, 26th. Just a couple weeks in. And you've got the whole world locked down. You've got 1 billion people under house arrest. That's all happened in just a matter of days. We're certainly living in the last days. I suppose that's another subject we could get into. A few emails, though, quite a few. Can't get to all of them, but this one here says, just wanted to send you a quick email response to express my gratitude for the recent TDs. I always enjoy them, however. These past few weeks, they've been the only daily source of sane analysis, outside the Trumpet website, of course, that's available, and it's beyond refreshing. It's just nice to have the conversations with those here in the office. This is a listener that works in one of our regional offices. And then be able to listen to the TD each day and not have to watch any of the henny-penny news sources spewing panic. I wish I could just set up a loudspeaker and blast it out the window of my car going down the road. So that's one of our enthusiastic listeners, one of our workers at a regional office. Another one here says, I did miss the Saturday broadcast, but listened this afternoon. Really inspiring. Thank you. It's good to listen to you and feels good to hear that kind of message with all the ones surrounding the COVID-19 lately. That's from New Brunswick, Canada. Another one here from South Carolina says, I listen to your podcast nightly. I love the Trumpet Hour, Key of David, Watch Jerusalem, and of course, the Trumpet Daily. Another one here says, one can sense unseen forces are at work behind this worldwide panic. International air travel and trade have practically stopped. Nations are practically barricading themselves. It's as though the globalism juggernaut has been slain overnight. The post-coronavirus virus world could see a tsunami of populism engulf this planet. It says tyrants and strongmen of all kinds would dominate the geopolitical landscape of the world in a very short time. That ties in with a comment that came from another listener, just talking about how that this really is dividing the world. It's not uniting the nations of this world by any stretch of the imagination. This listener writes, one can sense that's actually the same comment. Sorry, I had it locked in my notes twice. Another one here says, thank you so much for this broadcast. When I was finished listening to it, I noticed that all of my anxiety and stress that I have had about this virus was gone. This is in response to the Saturday lecture, the special edition. It says, when I finished listening to it, I noticed that all of my anxiety and stress that I have had about this virus was gone. I can't thank you enough for your continued connection to the Eternal One. These next few actually all came in response to the special Saturday broadcast. And remember, in case I run out of time right at the end, remember that we have another special Saturday edition of the Trumpet Daily Radio Show that's to be featuring my father speaking live from Armstrong Auditorium in Edmond, Oklahoma. That's coming up this Saturday morning. If you live in the great Midwest of the United States, 9 a.m. Central Standard Time and 2 p.m. in the afternoon here in the UK. It says, thank you for your enlightening and encouraging program on the Sabbath. This quote from Psalm 91, I think, is very appropriate for this time, and it is a promise that I believe God's people will find very encouraging in this crisis time. It teaches us to be repentant, then we are to be protected from the plagues and troubles associated with these viruses. Another one here says, thank you so much for today's very uplifting, hopeful, and inspiring edition about the coronavirus and the hype and hysteria that's happening right now. It's hard to understand how you can take on all your normal responsibilities and in the middle of this crisis provide us a live and wonderful message as none of us are allowed to assemble, leaving everyone at home. So everyone's self-isolating, as I said last week. And so it is a good opportunity to come together. And as I say, hopefully we'll set a new record on this Sabbath. This one here comes from Sydney, Australia. Thanks for all your hard work over the last few weeks. The TD radio program is one of the only few sane voices over the airwaves these days, as well as Trumpet Hour. How I wish that everyone could hear the program and get the real, godly perspective on what's going on instead of this mass panic. I was able to listen to a few programs this last Sabbath as all services were canceled worldwide. My thoughts are with you and your family at this time. Another listener writes from Nevada. I so enjoyed the radio show recording. Thank you for recording it. I'm just an embryo in my journey to be in God's family, and oh, what a journey it is. The literature the trumpet provides is so valuable for my journey, as well as all the radio shows. I look at all the documentation from your father and from Mr. Armstrong as workbooks to the one primary textbook, the Holy Bible. Another one here says, listen to the whole program. It was awesome. Made me super mad, though, all the lies, especially when the mayor of New York was saying that everyone was going to die. What in the world? Thanks for doing this show. That comes from Vienna, and I don't mean the city. Another one here says, I'm a member that was a part of the Worldwide Church of God for many years, and I became a little lost when Mr. DeKotch came on the scene after the death of Mr. Armstrong. My mother and I have recently started attending the PCG. I'm so thankful to be home again. Thank you for your words today. I've been keeping up on the world scene with your help as well. I try not to listen to the media too much, as I know they don't speak the truth. I pray for the U.S., the U.K., and Israel. I pray that our queen will see her errors and get on her knees. I pray President Trump will see he is not doing this himself, that he gets on his knees and asks God for forgiveness and gives him all the praise. It says, I keep my eyes on God and know he will bring us through. Another one here says, thank you for the healthy dose of truth that we received today. I needed that. Everyone I know thinks we all may get sick. Since I'm 87 years old, they are worried most about me. It says, you pulled me out of deep depression. Thank you for hope and faith. Thank God for Gerald Fleury and the PCG. Wish you could be on every Sabbath, but anytime is valuable beyond words. Another one here says, a spot-on program as usual. Guess that is an English term that I hope does not offend you in any way. Well, it doesn't offend us at all. I try to listen most days, but very special. It's very special to hear today when I'm locked in our home on this Sabbath day because of the insanity of the radical left. It was very comforting to be able to listen as though we were attending services. Prayers and thoughts go out to God's people around the globe for protection and healings during these trying times. Another one here from Canada. It says, thank you so much for the special program, which we watched this morning. We deeply appreciate the up-to-date information that we've been receiving from the Trumpet Daily during these times of unrest and hysteria. Thanks to the team for all the hard work in coordinating the facts And we look forward to the timeline. The most scary part has been the radical overreactions and resulting law enforcements. Our adversary really is in a hot rage, and it will be exciting to see how God will be delivering his church and people from this attack. It says, we appreciate being in the country on a property while we have enforced quarantine, and you are blessed to be able to have Edstone as a place of enforced isolation for the time being. And that's certainly true. Some of the places that we have to lock ourselves in are actually quite nice. One last one here. It says, thank you for the Sabbath TD. Five of us watched it live to great excitement in our family room as we used it as a Bible study. Thank you for your part during these trying times. And thank you for all of the feedback. If you'd like to submit some feedback, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Don't forget about the special edition of this program on Saturday. And of course, before that, we've got tomorrow as well. We'll see you then. We'll